Somewhere between waking and sleeping, on our journey towards the unfathomable deep, there comes a thin moment where we have one foot in the waking world and the other is in that other world where we relinquish conscious control. Pausing here and straddled between two planets that drive one another like gears, the attentive traveller will notice a narrow door, only wide enough to sidle through. This is the border of sleep, where imagination and reality are braided together, a chasm in the crust of consciousness, venting the hot pumice of imagery into the irresistible magma of narrative. Welcome to episode 58 of Stories from the Borders of Sleep, a podcast of curious tales created and voiced by your host, Seymour Jacklin. To find out more about the podcast, visit bordersofsleep.com or join in the conversation on the Facebook page. You're invited to ask questions or leave feedback and to join the email list to hear about some of the inspiration behind the stories and stay updated with what I'm up to. You can support me also to keep writing by making a donation, and details of that are on the website. Most of all, I love hearing from listeners, however you might get in touch, and I will always try to respond. The soundtrack for this week's episode is by Laura Insera from the album Musical Incense, which is available from magnatune.com. So, if you are ready to journey with me, then I shall begin. The Cicada Laundrette by Seymour Jacklin. Night time was the time to visit the Cicada Laundrette. During the day you would hardly notice it at all, but at night it was lit up like a thousand fireflies, and the glow of the interior would draw things to it. Approaching the light, one would soon be in range of the sounds of the place too, the churning and squealing of the washers, and the more ponderous chug of the dryers. Inside it was always warm and a little bit humid, and when all the dryers were going, the windows and tiled walls would get a film of condensation. Threads, fur, and feathers. Let us take care of it. Speak to us now about your laundering needs, said the peeling decal on the windows. On entering, you would see the washers were lined up along the left wall, with a veneer of uniformity. They were all the same marine blue colour, like a row of siblings lined up for a group shot. The family resemblance was definitely there, but number four, more often than not, touted an out-of-order sign. Number two leant drunkenly towards its missing foot, and at any given moment they were in a different attitude of open-mouthed anticipation, running, or spitting out a multicoloured mass of freshly washed laundry. The dryers took up the right-hand wall. They were green, twice as tall and wide as the washers, their voices deeper and somehow more disciplined. While the machines stared at each other across the room and ruminated on their loads, a line of low benches ran between them up the middle of the room. These were like camp benches, the sort of benches that are designed to be set up temporarily and easily stored, planks with foldable metal legs under them. Nevertheless, they had stood there all day and every day since the day the laundrette opened, in a time long forgotten, and they served as workbenches on which the washing could be stacked, and even occasionally someone would take the weight off their legs and sit for a while. In the back wall of the room, a door led to the room at the rear, which served as an office-cum-sorting area and general dumping room, which was supposed to be for employees only. There was also an old detergent dispenser fixed to the wall, from which customers could purchase a measure of washing powder by inserting a coin and twisting a knob, and next to it stood a jukebox that was now silent and mainly decorative, since the humid atmosphere had done something to its insides, and it had not worked for years. There was no need to get rid of it, for it also did meaningful work as a clothes horse. So now you have a first impression of the place. It may not surprise you that it was popular of an evening, and not just with those who had threads, fur, or feathers to wash. It was bright and warm, and the noise of the machines provided a comfortable background that meant silences were never awkward, and one would not be overheard if one dropped one's voice to gossip with a more intimate acquaintance nearby. It was a family-run business. Family, of course, being a rather loose term for the odd menage of Mr. and Mrs. Aardvark and their adopted gerbil, Mina, who was old enough but not big enough to have left home, and Digby, the dung beetle, who'd not been so much adopted as become attached to the family through circumstances that are outside the scope of this tale. Now, one particular evening, when Mr. Aardvark was on duty, he was found to be in conversation with a horse, and it went a little bit like this. "I'm afraid we can't wash your coat on you. You'll have to take it off," Mr. Aardvark was saying. "But I can't," said the horse. "It's stuck on me." He seemed exasperated, trying to express himself. "It's my skin," he explained. "Well, we can only wash detachables here, like tails and wings and jackets," said Mr. Aardvark, twitching his enormous ears and pushing his spectacles back up his very long snout. "My skin is not detachable," the horse snorted. An Aardvark's facial expressions are, of course, quite difficult to read, but you could say that Mr. Aardvark was rapidly becoming disinterested in his potential customer. It certainly showed up in his voice. "Then you need a grooming salon, not a laundrette," he explained with a hint of irritation. The horse looked down at his front feet and hoofed the ground. "Do you know where I can find one grooming salon? I'm sorry. My pelt is so itching me that I'm not thinking straight." He arched his neck as far back as he could, trying to get his chin to touch his back where it was itching him the most, but he could not reach. Then up spoke a small voice that was only audible for its squeaky pitch being so much higher than the rumble of the machines. "I don't know of any grooming salons, but I've always found a good swim in the river to cure an itch." The words came from a hedgehog who was perched on a laundry basket on one of the benches, and who would hardly have been noticeable if she hadn't spoken, since the basket contained a baggy rumple of grey-brown trousers belonging to some other customer. She suddenly had the full attention of the horse and the aardvark. "I didn't know hedgehogs could swim," said the horse. The hedgehog blinked. She wanted to say, "There's a lot you don't know." But instead she just said, "Of course we do." Just then the wail of one of the washers entering its final spin rose to a terminal scream and drowned out all the possibility of continuing the conversation. The three animals watched the blur of clothes spinning behind the porthole, momentarily caught in a timeless trance. When eventually it wound down again and churned to a stop, the contents of the drum flopped to rest, and there was a roar of silence, and the three of them had quite lost their train of thought. "The river, then," said Mr. Aardvark eventually. "Yes, thank you," said the horse. "I shall try that." He clopped towards the door and pushed it open with his shoulder. "It's best if you try to jump in and out of the water again and again, like the fish do when they're itching. That's something I learned from them," the hedgehog called after him as the door swung closed again and the horse's rump disappeared in the darkness outside. The relative silence deepened as the door closed, sealing the room in its own steamy atmosphere, where the fragrance of fresh linen mingled with the dank aroma of the constantly damp walls. The containment was so complete that it could have been that the laundrette was spinning on a lonely trajectory through the depths of space, entire unto itself and cut loose even from the strict measures of time. This effect was only amplified by the drone of the machines. Mr. Aardvark bustled into the back room, then returned with a clipboard and started making marks on it and looking around the room in a busy sort of way. But in truth, there was nothing to do. He was just such a one who felt a little uncomfortable with not appearing to have something to do. Not so the hedgehog, who would have loitered indefinitely anywhere as long as there was something to watch occurring or some idle chatter to feed. "I've not seen that chap before," she commented. Mr. Aardvark grunted and carried on looking busy. Presently they heard a tattoo of tapping on the window. Through the fog of condensation, near the bottom of it, there was a shadow of movement suggestive of wings. The tapping continued with some apparent urgency until Mr. Aardvark lumbered to the door and opened it. In hopped a shiny crow, like a fragment of the night that had detached itself and come a-visiting. The crow paused a few hops inside and looked around. As well as a handsome morning suit of jet black feathers, he sported a neat white bow tie. Mr. Aardvark kept holding the door open and asked, "Can I help you?"
"Nice place," the crow cawed. "I'm looking for a horse. Have you seen him?"
"Yes, he just left," piped the hedgehog.
Mr. Aardvark gestured out into the night, keeping the door open. He went that way. But Crow took a few more bounces into the laundrette and then flapped up onto one of the benches.
"Nice place," he said again, rearranging his wings.
Mr. Aardvark let the door close again with a sigh. He was feeling a little impatient tonight for some reason, and he didn't like himself when he was in that mood, which made him even more irritable. However, he checked himself and corralled his attitude. "Thank you, and welcome to the Cicada Laundrette," he said, and then rather automatically, because he couldn't stop himself, "Threads, fur and feathers, let us take care of it." Crow shook himself like a dog. It wasn't very crow-like, and he preened his chest as if suddenly a little self-conscious about his attire. When he looked up again, he announced,
"It's his birthday."
"The horse's birthday?" asked the hedgehog.
"Indeed," replied the crow.
All of a sudden, Mr. Aardvark's irritability melted, and with it the last traces of his exasperation with the horse. This changed everything. It was the horse's birthday. He should have treated the dear fellow like royalty. Everything is forgivable on your birthday.
"He wouldn't thank me for telling you. He usually keeps it quiet and slopes off somewhere."
"He seemed out of sorts. He was terribly troubled by an itchy pelt, so we suggested he try the river," said Mr. Aardvark.
"A good dip and a wallow and a shake-off should do him wonders," said the hedgehog.
"Oh yes, that works for me," said the crow.
The other two looked at him, and this time it was Mr. Aardvark who voiced their confusion.
"I didn't know that crows swam."
"Well, not exactly, but I do like to get my back wet from time to time. And there's nothing like a roll around in the snow, too."
"Poor fellow," said the hedgehog, bringing their attention back to the matter of the horse.
"Yes, my poor old friend Achilles. He seemed so gloomy and irritable when I greeted him with a happy birthday this evening."
"It doesn't seem fair," remarked Mr. Aardvark.
So the three commiserated with Achilles in his absence, giving various expressions of dismay that he should spend his birthday in discomfort. And for the hedgehog and Aardvark, who had only met the horse but once, it was remarkable how warm their friendship towards him became all of a sudden. A breath of cold air interrupted them. The door was opening again, slowly, very slowly. A tortoise was laboriously wedging the door wider by degrees with her shell. Halfway in, she paused for breath
and peered at the occupants of the room. "You lot look a lot like you need cheering up," she said. "Hello, Tara. Hello, Tara. Hello, Tara," they greeted her. Mr. Aardvark dragged his tail back over to the door and opened it wider so she could complete her entrance. She took her time. The others fell silent. Tara's unhurried serenity was infectious, and without noticing it, Crow, Mr. Aardvark, and the hedgehog also adopted her smile and began to feel much brighter for it. She moved to the recently finished washer and craned her neck up to look inside, explaining that she had promised her friend Blaze, the firefly, that she would collect their washing for them, as their youngsters had just pupated and they had their hands full. "Well, that load is ready for the tumbler and shouldn't take long if you don't mind waiting," said Mr. Aardvark, moving to the washer, opening it, and gathering the load of sodden firefly pupae jackets into his arms. While he busied himself moving the stuff to the dryer, Tara continued. "I don't know what's going on," she said. "On my way here, I go past Achilles, who seems to be in a fettle and can't stop because he's going to the river or something. Then I come in here and find you three muttering amongst yourselves and looking as if summer has been postponed." The other three tripped over each other to explain to Tara that Achilles was the reason for their woeful faces. And did she know that it was his birthday? No, she didn't. "That horse," she said, "he's a dark horse. Fancy not letting people know that it's his birthday today." Now, in spite of being a slower mover, Tara was a fast thinker. Perhaps a little party would cheer him up, she suggested. "Yes," said Crow. "Where?" said Hedgehog. "Who?" said Mr. Aardvark. "Here and us," said Tara brightly. The idea picked up speed like a spin wash. Crow began to hop about atop the washers, making suggestions. Mr. Aardvark found a genuine use for his clipboard and scribbled notes. Anyone passing by and looking in would have been treated to a curious scene indeed. The impromptu stand-up meeting of the Achilles Birthday Committee. There was an energy about it that seemed to spread beyond the room and make the neon glow issuing from the laundrette a bit brighter and warmer. A lizard, called Gertrude, just happened to notice this, with that heat-seeking intelligence that all reptiles have. She was hurrying back to her burrow, having stirred from the rock where she had spent the day, because it had finally been drained of its lingering warmth. Something was going down at the cicada laundrette. Something deliciously toasty, like a nicely baked boulder on a mellow afternoon. She felt it right down to the end of her scaly tail. She got there quickly, scuttling from hummock to hummock. As luck would have it, her arrival coincided with that of one Gilbert, a goat. Now, Gilbert had started hanging around the laundry in a social way lately. To begin with, he'd not had anything to wash, but he'd soon started sporting neckerchiefs in order to legitimise his use of the facility. To tell the truth, he'd also become compulsively attracted to freshly laundered cloth, and he just wanted to eat it. So rather like a child gravitating to a sweet shop, he really couldn't help himself. Gilbert opened the door, and he and Gertrude stepped inside. They entered on a lull. For the first time this evening, all the machines had completed their work and stood still. The goat and lizard had an awkward feeling that they had walked in on a conspiracy, which in fact they had. Mr. Aardvark was nearest the door, with his clipboard. The hedgehog was standing on the end of one of the benches, looking like a diver at the end of a diving board. Tara had settled herself halfway up the left-hand side by the washers, where she had a good view of the room, and Crow had hopped onto her back for an even better one. With the newcomers, Gilbert and Gertrude, that made six of them. Gilbert broke the silence with a bleated greeting,
and the conversation started up again. Once Gilbert and Gertrude were up to speed with affairs, they proved to be full of ideas too. As the night deepened outside, the atmosphere in the laundrette began to crackle with excitement, and a plan came together. Gilbert was looking at the jukebox and said it was a shame that it was broken because a good party was going to need some music. "What's wrong with it?" asked Gertrude. "It's jammed up inside. I think it got rusty," Mr. Aardvark explained.
"Hang on," said Gertrude.
She slipped into the gap underneath the contraption and moments later appeared behind the semicircle of glass at the top. She waved and grinned.
"I can see how it works. I'm going to fix it," she called, sounding a bit muffled to the others.
She then disappeared again, but for the tip of her tail, which Mr. Aardvark could see twitching while the rest of her was buried in the mechanics of the record changer. Suddenly, the front of the jukebox lit up and Gertrude popped her head up again.
"Wait,"
she said, and bobbed out of sight again. Mechanical noises, and then the crackle of static and music. Horns blasting out a fanfare over a mooching bass line. Underneath the rainbow arc of light around the top of the jukebox, Gertrude reappeared, saying something but completely drowned out by Stevie Wonder. She had, indeed, unstuck the mechanism, but it wouldn't work by itself, and she'd have to change the records manually. Or we should say, lizardually. Naturally, she'd just become the official DJ for the evening. Perfect. Crow was dispatched to see who else he could find to join them, and most importantly, to invite Achilles to the celebration. The sound of music blaring from the Cicada Laundrette was enough of an invitation for some. Mrs. Aardvark appeared from the back, wondering what was going on, and accompanied by Digby and Mina.
"I should have brought some snacks," Mrs. Aardvark lamented.
"Oh," said Digby, "I'll see to that." He scuttled off and reappeared a few minutes later, rolling a bite-sized ball of something brown and frosted with little flakes of white.
"I've just been making these," he said. "Try one."
Now there was a little concern about this. Would you eat a spheroid that a dung beetle had rolled for you? But Gertrude, who was a great adventurer when it came to food, took a trial bite and declared it to be delectable. So everybody tried. Digby said the recipe was a secret, but considering the variety of species present, each animal found them extremely palatable.
"And they have a little kick of something," said Mrs. Aardvark.
"You could say a punch," said the dung beetle. He slipped away and rolled another batch. In fact, he was rolling all night. He set up a little serving bar on the bench. Roll up, Digby's delectables freshly rolled," he called. Just then, Blaze showed up with her freshly metamorphosed brood of firefly kids. The little sparks pulsed and glittered in the air, taking care of the need for festive lighting. And at last, Achilles appeared, a little damp, with Crow riding on his back and announcing his arrival with a snort of surprise as he pushed his head through the doorway.
"Happy birthday, Achilles!"
The horse opened his mouth in astonishment and forgot to close it. Well, for most of the rest of the evening. The hedgehog's advice had worked, and a good plunge in the river had banished the itch. The day hadn't turned out so badly, after all. And so they partied until the sky began to lighten. There was ample entertainment. Gertrude took requests and kept the jukebox going. Tara offered rides on her back. Gilbert found her penchant for linen quite satiated by Digby's delectable creations. The hedgehog and Mina, the gerbil, spun themselves silly, gyrating on the dance floor. Crow's suggestion of a game of pin the tail on the horse was graciously accommodated by Achilles. And I won't say all that went on, but since this was a laundrette, after all, there may have been some dressing up after Gertrude detached her tail and replaced it with a stripy sock from one of the baskets of washing. It was all a bit raucous, to be honest, and it's even possible that Mrs. Aardvark ended up with a horse's tail. Tara managed to somehow put on a woolly hat so that the pom-pom on top seemed to be balanced on her back, and the hedgehog staggered home at first light with a fine pair of wings and wearing Gertrude's neckerchief like a bandana. "What on earth have you been doing?" said her long-suffering wife. "It's the last time I ever send you to pick up the laundry."